Hey everybody, I'm Debbie Davis and I'm an alcoholic. And it's just always delightful to be invited to the West Portland group. It feels very warm and home, like home to me, and I love the enthusiasm here. I must say, however, I'm surprised we only have 2 out of 3 legacies up here. I'm sure we'll have the third one by the time I'm invited next time. We have a third legacy, the 12 concepts, and I've become Mrs. Concepts recently. So anyway, it's a pleasure to be here. I want to thank Mike for the invitation. I want to thank Judy and Ben for being my hosts today. I've known them for 25 plus years, so it was like, again, feeling like I got to hang around home folk. I see Carrie all over the place. I have my friend Skip and my friend Eric from my old home, my current home group. Now this is his new home group, and the many people I've gotten to meet over the years here. You know, January is generally our big membership drive month. And I know those New Year's resolutions kick in, and I hope yours is still sticking with you. I was a holdout. I had a few sobriety dates and finally got one in February. But not too long ago, I was speaking at a meeting, and I'm sure maybe it's a lot like around here. We have the fellowships and the Lano clubs in my area. I live in Concord. It's kind of the East Bay of San Francisco. And a lot of times we'll have a morning meeting, which is way too early for me. They'll have a noon, like a 5:30, and maybe an 8 o'clock meeting. And if you get locked into one of those time frames, you generally don't bebop around. And so I was in a noon meeting on Monday, and one of the guys in there, and we have a lot of what they call speaker discussion. So you have you give a little short story on yourself, 15, 20 minutes, and then you pick a topic, and the balance of the time, and now we're meeting, is for discussion on that topic. That's 85%+ of the format of the meetings in my area. And so a guy's in there on the Monday noon meeting, and he says, "Hey, are you talking also at the 5:30 Tuesday?" And I said, "Yeah," and because I figured it was pretty much safe. I'm not going to have the same crowd, right, as if I was Tuesday at noon. So I said, "Yes, I am." He says, "Well, next time, tell the racy stuff." I'm like, "The racy stuff? Geez. Well, what would the racy stuff look like?" So I started thinking, because I certainly didn't have any racy stuff. Let me tell you, I'm not going to out-drunk or out-bottom or outdo anybody in the drinking years, I assure you that. But I started thinking about, what are the racy stuff? Well, what did I hear when I was early in sobriety? And I heard you're telling your stories, just like I'm going to be doing tonight. And I heard you say things like, you lost your family because of drinking. Now, some families, as we know, come back. Some never do. Some are maybe take a while. But my attitude was, oh, good, I wanted to get rid of them anyway, you know. So that's off the list. Thank goodness that takes care of that. Because I had been asked to leave their home because it was no longer a safe place for them. But see, I didn't see that part of it till I got sober. And I heard you talk about all your drunk driving charges. And I thought, well, I didn't have any of those because I worked for the city judge. And so, you know, I'd see you under your DUI hearing or whatever, and I'd be out drinking with you that night. And I knew all the police on the force. So when they would stop me for drunk driving, they took away my booze and they would tell me to go home. And so, well, that didn't count. So I didn't have any of that. And then you talked about totaling out cars and how many you totaled out. And I thought, I have never totaled out a car officially. You know how we get so specific, it wasn't the same brand and make as mine, right? But I had a little drunk car that arrived to Alcoholics Anonymous, the kind that, well, when you buy them, they're rectangular. Okay, they start off rectangular. And then when you drink and drive like I do, because again, it wasn't that I thought I drove better drunk. I heard many comments of that. It just was a part of what the day looked like was altered in some fashion. And some a little more than others. And but you're driving. You have to get to places. And it, you know, it went from square to got rounded out with the drunk bumps and, you know, things got in your way and you didn't see those cars and the things are falling off and the window passenger driver's window had been shot out of it. And my gas cap was a mitten I stuck in there, okay? And I'm like driving a Molotov cocktail around, basically, and who cares, right? So I thought, well, that doesn't count. And then they talked about losing jobs. And, okay, I always had a legitimate job they take taxes out of. So I always had a legitimate job that paid taxes and everything. And, but I had, especially my last year actively out there, I had acquired... Well, maybe I had been let go of a few jobs. Maybe I had quit before I got fired, but I acquired a bad habit of I'd quit in a blackout. This is a problem when you go to work the next day, you know. They're surprised, you're surprised, they're surprised, and, you know, it's so awkward. You know, it's just awkward. And I heard you talk about that, and then I heard the women. They were talking about their years of prostitution. And I'm thinking, you could charge for that, you know? And I'm like, man, my one entrepreneurial opportunity, I guess. And so, you know, part of the reason I share this with you is because, like so many of us coming in, I don't care if it's your umpteenth time. It can still have that thought of, yeah, but my case is unique. My case is different. And that was when I was introduced to you, that's exactly what I did. I looked at all of the differences between me and you. And you never, ever brought and said to me, you're different, you're too young, you're not drunk enough, you're not long enough, you're not nothing enough. You never said that to me. It was all in my own mind because I knew, for me, I wasn't done drinking. The fact that I'd been put in a treatment facility was not because I'd had one too many Coca-Colas, right? There's a reason I got put in a facility under a court commitment. The thing of it is that I found all the differences between me and you until the day finally came for me when I had a surrender. And in my time of being here in Alcoholics Anonymous, until that day comes, there really wasn't going to be any sure possibility, sure hope that I would do anything different. Because as long as I kept above my eyebrows, it was simply information. And until it made what we often talk about as that 2-foot drop from my head to my gut, until that day finally came, which I didn't know ever would, until and when it came, the shift happened. And that finally happened on a Saturday night for me. And my last relapse was absolutely kind of an embarrassing moment. It was about as thrilling and as exciting as, you know how when you blow up a balloon and then you let the air out and it goes, that was it. I mean, that was the excitement of that last debacle, if you will, or whatever you want to call it. But what happened is that event, that experience kicked me off the fence of reservation and indecision as to whether or not I was an alcoholic. I hadn't planned on it doing that, but it was as the moment was as white light, emptiness for a moment as I had ever been before or since. And that moment for me was that I don't want to live like this anymore. I was altered enough. But not in blotto world. I was altered enough to where this no longer held a fantasy. It no longer held, that was not there. And I didn't want to live like that anymore. And between that heartbeat and the next one, that nano moment, the thought came into my mind that those people in AA seem to know what to do, because I had been visiting you, and I mean that sincerely, just drop in on you for the last 10 months, now and then. And what happened was the one degree shift. Now, it wasn't going to be one of these, because that just won't really work for somebody like me, but that one degree shift, and no matter what you do, if you're on skis, if you're in a boat, if you're in a car, it doesn't seem to be much, but the farther down the road, the more different the direction becomes. But also over the years, I've had many course corrections. You could call them criticisms. You could call them guidance. You could call those lots of things, I guess, but they've been course corrections. Humility, getting called on things, my behavior. And had there not have been a course correction, again, you might have had a different speaker here tonight. So the course corrections of my life have enabled me to become inside and outside who I am today and what I get to do today, how I get to serve, the pleasure to serve this fellowship in any way I can. So that was a Saturday night, and on Sunday I was sober all day, and the way that I used to go to meetings is I would walk in when they started, leave when it was over, leave, got her done, check it off the list, because that's all it was for the first 10 months of visiting you, was a check-off list item. That's it. And so I decided to do something different, and I went 20 minutes early. I mean, that for me was like going the day before, you know. Who goes 20 minutes early? Well, like here, a lot of people are here 20 minutes early. I found that the long timers were there probably on their second cup of coffee by the time I showed up, making themselves available for goofy people like me to find out about this thing. And I took advantage of that. And I am, again, I'm not somebody, I am no scholar, I am not the brightest bulb in the room, and I know that. But I also have my own ego and arrogance that is embarrassed to ask any questions, even though I don't know. By asking, you'll know I don't know. And that I didn't want. And so my way of asking for help was asking the question, what do you do to stay sober? End of question. And I knew I was sincere and meant it, and so did they. And they began to share with me what they did. Not what they heard, my Aunt Betty did this. This is what we did. And they offered that, they laid out that kit of spiritual tools at my feet. I had to pick each one of those up. They didn't just hand it to me. Said, here they are. This is what we've done. And the first thing was, one day at a time, we don't take that first drink, and we get a sobriety date. I thought, well, I feel all in today, and I knew it. And there's a difference about just, yeah, okay, I'll do it, and all in, and I knew that difference within me. And so I was all in, and I said, this is the day I'll take. And it's been the same day since. That was February 8, 1976. So I've been walking with you for 42 plus years. Now, I also, being here 42 years sober, I got here pretty young. I mean, I love being 42 years sober and 39 years old. You know, it just, I drank in a past life and walked into AA. Science may one day accomplish this, right? But it hasn't done so yet. I took my first drink at 12 and my last at 18. It was never my intention ever to get sober. Maybe when I was old, like 30, you know, right? Because at 18, 30 is like really grandparent age, right? And I never intended to get sober, live a different way of life. My life was so itty-bitty. Some people, I would hear about their armchair traveler dreams. I never had any of those. I lived from the last party to the next party, and everything in between was a waste of time. My life was so itty-bitty, tiny-teeny. I had no ambitions. I had no dreams. I had no I hope to be's, I want to be's, I want to go's. Zippo. I lived in small towns, and that was just going to be fine, and I could see me spending the rest of my life in those little tiny towns drinking. But that isn't what God had in store. And so I took that date, and again, my drinking started off at 12 years old. I know many people come from alcoholism somewhere in their family. We can't define or find out where it is in my family. I am the only one. My parents are nice people. They were not problem drinkers by any means. They were what we call social drinkers. They literally had the dusty whiskey bottle on the top shelf because it was rarely ever brought out. Dusty till I started drinking anyway. And that whiskey bottle was what I would tap into. I had been invited by the cool kids in school to my first drinking event. If I took a drink before that night, it's nothing I remember, a sip off of a beer or whatever, but nothing memorable. But it was on a Monday, and the kids are inviting me for Friday, and I couldn't wait. Oh, my God, wild horses could not have kept me from going to that party because this was the group I wanted to be associated with. I didn't belong with the athletes, and I didn't belong with the academics. And why I was drawn to this group that smoked cigarettes, drank beer, skipped school, I don't know, right? But I was drawn to this group. They invite me Monday, parties Friday night, all day long. I am planning. My excitement is building. By Friday morning, somewhere between Monday and Friday, I heard about drinking. I don't know where I got this idea, but Friday morning I woke up thinking about getting drunk that night. Because this is my assured way. This is my debut. I got to make it good. You know, I got to be the star to be in part of this group. And I woke up that morning with the first thoughts being my usual thoughts, which was, you know, be a good daughter, be a good student, obey the rules, do the right thing. Because that's part of what my basic DNA is. I'm not a born rebel by any means. If you tell me turn left, I turn left, okay? But the second thing on that thought list was, I'm going to get drunk tonight. I don't know what it's going to be like, but it's going to be good, you know? So like many of you, I arrived at that party, and I remember the first night of drinking, at least the bits of it, and how it would change my world. And I had no idea of what drinking would do because I'd never seen anybody altered by drinking. I'd see them drink, but no personality change like I was about to embrace. And I don't know, you know, when you're 12 and 13 years old, it's like a liquid potluck. You know, just junk is brought and you throw it in a pot. I don't even know, God knows what's all in there. You know, it's just one of those kind of things, right? But the first thing I drank was something, and I don't even know what it was, out of a brown paper bag. I thought, how fitting as I look back. Way to start anonymously, you're drinking something. I knew it was alcohol. Pretty sure it was alcohol anyway, hoping it was alcohol. And by the time it got to me, and I'd been kind of watching how those kids did it, I took that bottle and go glug, 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 and gave it to the next guy, and it was like, poof. That, my throat just got ripped out. You know, I'm not expecting this to taste like this, and I'm just kind of flip-flopping on the inside and looking cool on the outside, of course. But I'm just gyrating inside, and my throat just got ripped out, and there was this quiet little voice that came around and said, don't worry, you can always get another throat. Just go for it. Just keep going. Do what you're doing there. And a few moments later, when it hit bottom for the first time, wasn't a parade or anything, but my shoulders relaxed. And I got this warm glow 2 inches behind my belly button. I'm 12 years old. I'm thinking, you know what? Oatmeal has never done this for me, you know? It still doesn't, you know, and I'm just like, I don't know what is in there, but I want some more. And it passes around again and gets to me, and I'm excited because I want this feeling some more, maybe a little bit bigger. And it gets to me, I take a glug, glug, glug off of there, give it to the next guy. And if there is a a line we cross. We talk about this invisible line from social to alcoholic drinking. Well, let me tell you, I just pole vaulted over that thing. Because when I took that second drink, my throat's a little seasoned now, so it wasn't quite as bad, right? And when it went down the second time, there was a shift. And it went from drink number one, please accept me, to drink number two, aren't you glad I'm here? You know, I mean, what takes you from there to there, you aren't going to give up very easily. And man, it had me hooked. I moved into a room within my world, my mind world that I wanted to be in all the time. I no longer needed your approval. And away I was, gone my way of alcoholism. I didn't know that I just lit up the illness of alcoholism within me. I don't know if I had it before. I don't know what the symptoms necessarily are before for me. I was selfish and self-centered as an only child anyway. And, you know, it's just so I don't know if that happened or what. But boy, when I took my first drink, I lit it up. And I activated the two primary symptoms as I know them from our literature. One is the mental obsession. And that mental obsession, I told you Friday morning, I woke up with good ideals in spot number one and getting drunk in spot number two. And Saturday morning, those are in reverse. I'm waking up and my first thought is about doing that all over again. Where am I going to get it? The how, the why, the who? I woke up breathing that thought and would until I came to you, even in the non-drinking time. And those good ideals, nice to have, but I can't drink the way I want to and live that way and do those, so one by one, they fade. And that night, I activated the symptom of the phenomenon of craving. I have never had an allergy, so when I learned about that here, that was a foreign thing. I don't have any other allergies to compare it to. And the way we manifest alcoholism is a little different than if you have a peanut allergy or a shrimp allergy. We fight through it. We go through. We're going to get through this thing. We're going to learn how to drink better and try the concoctions and eat or don't eat or wake or don't wake. You know, we work on that. Not knowing it's an allergy that when I take that first drink, I do not have the ability to control, predict, or anything regarding the rest of that experience. It is out of my hands. And I don't know that. But I activated those two symptoms. That night, I activated some patterns for me. These patterns don't necessarily make me an alcoholic. Some have had one, two, or all three of these things. But because they were on night number one, I saw it. Y'all had this happen to you too. Until I would learn later, I was the only little kid that got drunk in the room that night. And so this wasn't what everyone was experiencing, but the reason it was okay is because it was night number one. Everything was new a first time, so it was like, okay, this is the drinking package. You drink a whole bunch, and then you black out, which I didn't know what that was. I just had a memory fade, and then you take a nap, and then you come to with your first case of the dry heaves, and I didn't know what that was. And so that's the drinking package. Oh, okay, locked in. Check. And the only thing that was added over the next 5 active years was a year later, I'm 13 years old, and I drink whiskey out of a bottle with a beer chaser. And I tend to black out too quickly. But I found, as we do, we're very resourceful, I found something that would help keep me alert for a little longer before the inevitable blackout. And I found, because I want to be active in the middle, I don't want to be sleeping through my life. And I found things like speed and acid will help you. And they really will. They'll help you get there quicker and in color. And I was just all over that pattern. And so that was added at 13. And somewhere about 16, I added the morning something. It's just one of these rolled right into it nonchalantly sort of things. And I found, of course, I felt better because of the night before. And those are the only two things that really got added. And at age 17 and a half, my father, you know, I love ABCs of the how it works, because the B says that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And if a human power could have relieved my alcoholism, it would have been the effort my father did. And he didn't know what in the heck he was dealing with alcoholism. You know, there'd be the lectures, there'd be the talks, there would be the efforts that were the frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices, well-meaning, but he was in the wrong fight. He had no tools for this one. Nobody knew what was going on. And when he sought professional advice about what to do with his daughter, he, the professional, knew what I had. And so he suggested they commit me while he still had the legal custody to do so. And that's what he did after a two-week vacation, of which I was the only one who knew I was on vacation. You know, one of those kind where they're calling the morgues and the police stations and you show up looking for money with what? You know, what's the big deal? We don't hurt anybody but ourselves, the big fat lie we tell, right? They'd been worried sick for 2 weeks, not knowing what, if anything, had happened to me. I just disappeared, out ripping and roaring. And I showed up looking for money, but he had other ideas, and that was the night I was committed to a treatment program for alcoholism. I'm 17 and a half years old, and you've made a really big mistake. I mean, let's start with this. I think you should at least be of legal age to buy alcohol before you start calling people alcoholics. You know, I still had a few more years to go. It was 21 in North Dakota at that time, but they didn't care. So I was sent to this place, and of course, the very first thing we're introduced to is Alcoholics Anonymous literature. I'd never heard of you. I'd never heard of the word sobriety or alcoholism or Alcoholics Anonymous. That was completely foreign to me, that stuff. And what happened is that over the next, well, it was a four-week program I was in 7 weeks for, I would be educated. And we would be taken to outside meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I would sit in the back of the backest back corner I could possibly get into. I didn't want to catch alcoholism. I knew you could do that here. I could tell you could catch it if you were too close. And so I would sit in the far back, distract myself. Today I'd be on my cell phone the whole time, right? And I just really didn't care. But every now and then, I would tune into your stories, which is what I opened in my sharing tonight, of all the differences between me and you. And the biggest one was my age. I am too young to be an alcoholic. So after that, I was sent to an all-women's halfway house in Minneapolis. I was there a total of 9 months, but the first 7 months I did the bare minimum. Don't drink, don't take anything else, and go to one Alcoholics Anonymous meeting a month. It's all we had to do. Well, I can do that. I'm not going to go to two in a month and like join AA or anything like that. So I went to that meeting. I walked in when it started, left when it was over. Susie got that paper signed, got her done. I never complained that you didn't say hi to me. I never made it possible. And I knew that. I did that on purpose. So if you come in here late and you leave early, I hope you'll reconsider. Because there is so much more to Alcoholics Anonymous than putting the plug in the jug and sitting in some meetings. It's a way of life, as I would come to learn. You will cheat yourself if you do what I did. Come in when it starts, leave when it's over, and got her done. I invite you to join us. And so I did that for 7 months. I went to California to visit my mother on a holiday. I'm there 2.5 weeks. First week, I'm hanging out with the people I used to drink with. Last weekend, half drunk and loaded with them. No surprise. But there was a surprise. There was no surprise that I picked up anything. But the surprise was it wasn't like it used to be. I had for 7 months lived in the fantasy I'd left. That it was about the bars and the music and laughing and drinking and dancing and having a great time all night long. No. That's not what it was. It couldn't have been more opposite. What I recall of that week and a half was starting off with the first couple of drinks and into the blackout I went. And the next real conscious memory I have is a week and a half later on a flight home. I'm grateful I was with people I knew, because many things could have happened in a week and a half that I had no control over because of my drinking. On that flight home, having that free champagne on Western Airlines, and they served it at that time. They don't know I shouldn't be drinking. Might as well. It's my last one. I flew home with the decision that I have learned my lesson. But again, it was simply information. And all I did when I returned home was I stepped my meetings up from one a month to one a week. Not much difference, little tiny bit more activity, but I don't really want to quit drinking forever. I know you say it a day at a time. I know you mean forever, though, right? You're just trying to reel us in when you say that one day at a time, Steph. Yeah, right. And 5 weeks later, on a Friday, I get a letter in the mail from these friends in California that had one joint in it. Is right. That's what I said. And I thought, I think I'll just keep it, because, you just never know when you're going to need something like this. I mean, I didn't go looking for it. It was brought to me. I got all the rationalization going on. And it was amazing. I needed it the next day. That timing was pretty amazing, right? Well, the minute I got that and I went, I started plotting and planning. That's what I did. That's why I say, that last day on the 7th of February, why it was so non-eventful, it was just, because there was, and yet, as unexciting as that was, it was the greatest conflict within, I recall. Do it, don't. Do it, don't. Get rid of it, keep it. Just on and on and on. The paranoia. Before, during, and after. I mean, the whole thing that went with it. And I just, again, altered enough. I call it my driest martini. My friend Rita used to call him that. My driest martini. Because I am an alcoholic through and through. I might have taken other dry goods I just heard someone cutely say they're cousins. Other things like that. But I know in my heart I am an alcoholic. And I'm so grateful for myself that it's as simple as that. And the solution is as simple as this. And that's how I got my sobriety date. Now, the rest of the things they've shared with me, because everybody's going to get a sobriety date. You might not have it long, but you will get sober. You will draw a sober breath. But if you want to keep it, the rest of the things that they shared with me is how I've gotten to keep it. The basis of it all is about, through these steps, developing a relationship with a higher power. Whatever you might call that power, to believe in something greater than myself. That's the underlying basis. But to get to that, there were some actions. They said that we go to a lot of meetings and we get a home group. I know this is the home group for many of you. If I lived here, it'd probably be my home group too, because I like activists. I've lived in four different parts of the country, and to date, that's the only reason I've had four different home groups. It hasn't meant that I haven't wanted to have different home groups because of personalities, of course. And sometimes it's not always easy for people to stay in certain, but I've stayed in there because I know, and they showed with me, well, if you leave this one for a personality, there's going to be another one in that one, and in the next group, and pretty soon you're going to run out of groups. So you might as well stay and learn how to get past that. And so I've had four different parts of the country and four different home groups. And I realized when I moved to Concord, I've also had four different last names. Okay, so kind of every city kind of had its own last name. So I've been up here now in the Bay Area for 18 years. It is my last name and my last stop. And I'm happy to report that. That's my plan anyway. Maybe I should add that part, dot, 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 if that be your will, right? My home group is the primary purpose group. It meets Monday nights, 8 o'clock. It's an open speaker meeting. It's an hour and 15 minutes. And I've been an active member of that group from the very beginning. It's 20 years old, and I've been with them for 18. I am an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not a visitor here. I don't simply attend meetings. I'm in the middle. It's important for me. The longer I'm here, the more necessary for me to stay solid and grounded is being an active member, not just attending meetings. I've got to have commitments. It's very important that I do for me. And so we talk about a home group. And, you know, I've had plenty of home groups, you know, where you've had the struggles at the business meetings or there's personalities. I remember my prior home group, my husband and I at that time, we were married 5 years and 9 months, and our marriage would come to an end. And it's a little uncomfortable to be in the same home group when it's me and the soon-to-be ex-he and the brand-new she. Now, I don't know if you've experienced any of that, but it can be awkward. There's 250 people in there, but it's small, you know, when all three of you. And it was important. Nobody got custody of the home group, right? We all had to learn how to work around in the world that was important to all three of us. And so, you know, my way to remedy that was that I needed to work the room even more so. Not just a random, hi, how are you, hi, how are you, hi, how are you, but useful stuff. Eyeballs. Tell me how your day is going. How's it going for you today? And listening. Looking especially, as I still do, for the unfamiliar faces. I don't know if they're new. I don't know if they're returning. I don't know if they're visiting. I don't know if they're new to our community, but I need to find out. I want them to be as welcomed and feel good about that group as I do, and that's my job. So a home group taught me about accountability and responsibility and service and anonymity in my service. Just get it done. You don't need to have the big deal job in the group. You need to just help make it happen. That's what you need. And so a home group, I need a home group more than the home group needs me. I need a commitment in that group more than they need me to have a commitment. If they said to me, when I asked for a commitment, what can I do? They said, well, we're all full up, got all the jobs full. I'd say, that's fine. Well, then I'll be the parking lot greeter, or I'll be the de-greeter when people are leaving the meeting. I'll do something because I know how to be a taker like that. That comes back quickly. But you said, no, not here. Not here. You got to flip that over. You have to become the giver. You cannot be that taker anymore. So a home group, this is some of the rich stuff a home group has given me. They talked to me about sponsorship. That, for those of you who are new, it's like a mentor. You know, I've had three sponsors in my sobriety. My first one, 45 years sober, 53. My second sponsor, when they died, they both had sponsors. My current sponsor is a woman named Millie G. She is in Southern California. She is 49 plus years sober and 96 years old, at least for another month. And she still is in five meetings a week and at her home group Wednesday night wears a skirt and a dress. Or I meant skirt and heels. Not kitten heels. She wears high heels. At 96 and 11 months years old, she rocks it. And the thing of it is that she has a sponsor. And so I've had the pleasure of having major activists in my life as my mentors who have helped guide me through the three legacies of Alcoholics Anonymous by the way they live them. Now, them passing it on to me is great, but there's no glow until I pass it on. This is the joy of getting to watch the dead come to life, to getting to watch those who've been around here for a while perhaps get stale and stuffy and watch the dust come off of them and revive. Because I expect them to pass it on too, because if they don't, well, then they don't need me as a sponsor. I will not sponsor takers. You've got to be willing to serve somehow, some way, somewhere. Otherwise, you don't need me. Get someone else who doesn't care. I care. So sponsorship, vital to me. They talk to me about taking the steps. And the reason I use that verb is because that's what chapter 5 uses. Here are the steps we took, and then you're ready to take certain steps. And it feels differently to me. Whatever word you choose is your choice. But I like that word take, because it felt like one by one I was incorporating them and change. My life was changing because of them. And so when I was just shy of my fourth AA birthday, I moved to Atlanta, Georgia. I got a sponsor, a home group locked in, and I took that four-year cake, and there was this click and shift in my head that, you know, you're 4 years sober now. You know something. I don't know what I knew, but I knew it really well, you know, whatever it was. And that was that 7 meetings a week's an awful lot of meetings. You know, you're in a new community. I think you're just going to trim that down to 2 or 3, because I've heard this bantering and talk about get some balance in your life. Well, let me tell you about balanced myself out of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got so balanced, I was, you know, useless. And what happened is I didn't run it by that sponsor who was 27 years sober longer than me and very, very active. No, I made that decision, and I did not realize I had just walked through the door with the invisible ink marked complacency. And I went from 7 meetings a week to 2 or 3. 7 would have been perfect in a brand new community to get to know the new community, get to know the area. But I shrunk it down. I did what I called dumb it down. And I went down to 2 or 3, which quickly became 2. Over the next 2 years, from 4 to 6 years sober, instead of being one of the early birds to arrive at the meeting, I'm now shrunk that down to 5 minutes. I'm not late, and I'm not walking in as they start, but almost. I'm down to 5 minutes, grab that coffee and sit down, because that's all you got time for. And instead of being one of the last people to leave, that got shrunk down over the next 2 years, and where we're doing amen, shake, shake, and my taillights are already out the door. I'm down to got or done again. Check off AA for the week. It became a checklist item again. And at 6 years sober, I was, some call it a terrible dry drunk on the inside. I was certainly beginning to do drinking behavior in a non-drinking way. I was so restless, irritable, and discontented. And I thought, God, I'm 24 years old. I'm probably going to live a long time. This is a long time to live miserable. I came up with a plan. People, places, and things are going to make me happy. Now, it's really called men, money, and mansions are going to make me happy, okay? So we're on a mission. And about 3 weeks later, I met a little fella. He had all the qualities I was looking for. I'm sure I'll eventually fall in love with him, but let's get our priorities straight, right? Let's get things in order. He'd even been sober 13 years, hadn't been to a meeting in 3. No problem. I'm going to help him get back into AA. I just totally lost track of the fact that he just recently purchased a bar. Okay? Not a problem. We dance there. So I'm on a mission. I got this little guy in sights. And boy, we were in a whirlwind romance for 3 months. Of course, I was in a whirlwind romance for 3 months. He had no idea about it. And this guy finally, he got married to somebody else. So I know, right? So I let him go. And I just wasn't too long. Up pops another little fella, got all the qualifications I'm looking for. And he went down the aisle with somebody else. And I've married off more men. Everybody who dated me married the person after they dated me. I don't know what charm I have there. But At 6 years and 9 months of sobriety, I came crashing back into Alcoholics Anonymous, physically sober, but almost like drunk in every other way. I was so removed from my higher power. I was so removed from being in service. I was so removed from the sunlight of the Spirit. I was so all about self. And I came crashing back into Alcoholics Anonymous with 6 years and 9 months of sobriety that could barely be called sobriety. And I came crashing in. And I didn't want to live that way anymore. It's like in February of 76, I had a severe surrender to the substances in my life to change. This is like I had a severe surrender to the illness. And my life had to change. And that's when I looked at the steps as if I was looking for them for the first time. I needed that new vision, that new view of the steps. One of the things when I work with repeat relapsers is I tell them a couple of things. Number one, you have to stop saying the words, I know, because you don't. You have information that you have not applied. That's what you have. And every time you put up the I know, you block off any opportunity to change. You can say, I agree, I believe that, I see that, but I know stops the forward motion. And the other thing is, you can only talk about how, when somebody says, how long are you sober? You give them, how long are you sober this time? Not, well, I've been around for, because your ego will not allow you to be a newcomer and have a new experience with this program when you have to give the back feed for ego. And I was ready for a new chance and new view of this, and I took those steps again as if I'd never seen them before. Just blank slate, I felt, is what we were working with. And when I started, I really felt like I was facing in that direction. By the time I got to the 12th step, I was in a new direction. But step 12 doesn't say, Deb, now start over and keep doing more self-analysis. It says, girl, you got your marching orders. Get out there and share it with someone else who doesn't know there's a way out. Because when you do get to relive and keep fresh the steps. And I'm always have several gals. I think I have three right now that I'm taking through the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, as well as others in the other three, two legacies and the service manual. So it needs to stay fresh, but only not because I'm doing it for me, it's because I'm passing it on. So, and someone else can have this chance that I know I've been given. They talked about the traditions. They said, those are just for the group, but you are a member of a group. You need to be an informed member of a group. So you need to know how those traditions work. They're not just for those people. You are those people. While you're at it, why don't you learn how to apply them in your personal life? Oh. As someone who is as selfish and self-observed and self-absorbed, I should say, and self-centered as I am, I had no tools. I want to say that lots of people probably tried to provide me with good relationship, get along with other people kind of tools. These were the ones that I could understand. These are what changed the nature of my relationship, whether it's one-on-one, one with my group, one with a group of people, a non-program, one with the world, regardless of the quantity. They have been the ones to help me change that direction. They talked to me about service. They were very clear. Service was the stuff you do outside of your home group. Okay, maybe it's H&I work or corrections or going into treatment programs. Or it's the stuff you do outside, the inconvenient kinds of things. Service like coming up here, that sort of thing. And I think, you know, one of the stories I like to tell on myself happened maybe 5-6 years ago now. And so I might get up early in the morning, but I'm not ready early in the morning, if you know what I mean. So I'll never have a morning meeting unless I stayed up all night as a regular for me, okay? And so I got a call from a guy to speak at a 6:30 a.m. Friday morning meeting. And I was available. I said yes, but I thought, oh, my God, does he know what that means? I mean, I might as well stay up all night to be ready to go to that, because let me tell you, I don't wake up and look like this, okay? I don't wear baseball caps and T-shirts and flip-flops to meetings. I want to bring my best to you. And so this takes, you got to be alert and plan and think about it and be, you know, you got to have it working on. And I'm like, oh, my God, you know, does he know? And so for the next few weeks, I'm kind of going back and forth about, God, maybe I'll get sick the day before, you know, or maybe I'll fall down or something and can't go. It was like, I'm trying to think of excuses that I know I'm not going to use, right? But there was just this part of me, this, you know, we're down to two voices, you know, the pro and the con voices. And finally, it was like this day comes and somebody inside goes, oh, stop, just stop. Let me make sure I understand this. You're saying that someone has invited you to share your experience, strength, and hope at 6:30 on a Friday morning to anyone who wants to listen. You talk about how much you love this program. Love is an action word. Gratitude is an action word. But you're saying, but gee, that's inconvenient. Did I have that right? Yes. Okay. Let's flip that coin over. And what if somebody said to you, at that location at 6:30 in the morning is where the booze and the boys were going to be, would that have been inconvenient? And the answer was, God, no. You know, I'd have been there at 6 o'clock. They're late. Where are they, right? The weird little analogy of that is that I know I don't ever recall in my drinking saying, no, I have to go to work or school the next day. I don't have any money. It's awful late starting at 11 o'clock at night. I don't remember ever saying no. It was always, you bet, I'll be there, I'll drive, let's go. I never paused a moment for drinking and dying. And yet, a little bit of inconvenience, a little less sleep, and I'm pausing. Of course I go. Of course it's always awesome when you leave there and you just kind of feel like you knew you were there and hopefully you did some good. But that analogy, you know, can still be with me today. The lazy bones can set in. I still go, but I want my attitude always to be like it was there into my service work here. And the other thing they shared with me was about to carry the message. Everyone in this room has a message to carry. You will be able to touch people with your message and how you related and your experience to people I never could touch. And vice versa. That's why all of us are so important here. I've shared with you, I've moved in different places and I've had some ups and downs. I've been married. I've been divorced. I'm remarried now 17 and a half years. I've relocated. I've moved to places. So I know what that's like starting over and your thoughts of they don't do it right here, whatever it is. I know that. It's amazing they were sober till you got there. I understand that. This is the day that I woke up sober, and because of you and what you've shown me by example, that I get to spend all day today sober and with you. And when I go to bed tonight and say my prayers again, I will thank God that I got to share my experience, strength, and hope with you, the West Portland Group. Thanks for having me. Thank you.